welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, I'm Jen, and this is Turn the Page, the official podcast of Syosset Public Library, and I would like to introduce you to this week's guest. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book?
Yeah, hi. My name's Hillary Campbell, and my new book is a graphic memoir called Murder Book that explores my lifetime obsession with true crime.
That's great. I love the title. Like every time that I've said the title to somebody, they've just laughed and they've like instantaneously have gotten like a sense of what it's about and like what it's going to be. So I was wondering if we could start with you talking a little bit about your work in general, like what kind of comics you've made before this and how that led you into this project.
Yeah, so I, since about 2017, something like that, I've been doing cartoons for the New Yorker. And so that's kind of like the primary, things that people recognize me for. But I illustrate a lot of books as well. The first sort of big book that I illustrated is called Feminist Fight Club. That was a very cool, awesome book manifesto written by Jessica Bennett. And so I illustrate books and do my own thing and, you know, other magazines too, you know, Cosmopolitan, New York Times and all that kind of stuff. But mostly the New Yorker. And then about 3-something years ago, I started to work on Murder Book, and it was obviously the biggest thing I've, you know, tried to accomplish ever. So it was like very, it's so different than drawing a cartoon for the New Yorker, you know, the New Yorker's like, you come up with a joke and then like, there's the joke, you know? So, drawing something of this capacity was a wild and different journey.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that because, there must be a huge difference between producing like a one panel joke and then doing like a full-length narrative.
Yeah.
What was for you like the biggest challenge in making that leap?
Oh man, I mean, well, like stamina was a big problem. initially starting to approach a project that big, you know, it is very daunting, very nerve-wracking, and having the feeling of like, where do I start? You know, like, I think I have all these ideas, but I don't know really where to begin. And then that can just sort of like give you anxiety and then you don't begin. and so it's like the New Yorker is more like you try to think of a couple jokes throughout the week. And then maybe on Monday or Sunday, you're like, I'm going to sit down and draw these like 7 jokes. And then like, I'm going to send them on Tuesday. And like, that's just kind of like it. So this was obviously a much more introspective process. And a lot of just boxes filled with notes and jokes and different ideas and different stories and thoughts that I've had, you know, just, and scrolling through all my old notebooks and trying to find any time at any point that I ever wrote down anything even remotely related to true crime. I never done it before, you know, so it was like, I was certainly making it up as I went along. I was like, well, I don't know, you know, I guess this is what I'm going to do. And I read a lot of graphic memoirs leading up to starting my book to like sort of really, because I actually hadn't read a lot of them before, and now I'm super into them, but it wasn't something I consumed a lot of before becoming a cartoonist. So the works of like obviously Roz Chast and the woman whose name is this Ellen, who wrote Marbles, anyways, Ellen something, I'm totally blanking, and Julia Wirtz, and then I would read interview like Julia Wirtz, I'm friends with, but I love her graphic memoirs, and then I read about her process, which made me feel much more comfortable, because like there's all these people that are like, do a whole big first draft and then you look at it and then you start from the beginning again, and I was like, oh no, I can't work like that. Like, I'm so impatient. you know, I want to just start drawing it, which is maybe stupid. But then I like read Julia's notes and she was like, I only sketch like 10 pages ahead at a time. And then I just kind of work like that. And then I was like, I'm going to try to follow her model of like, I have these ideas. I'm going to do these little chunks and then just see how they come together. And then that's what an editor's for, obviously. Thank God I have a very patient editor.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because it seems to me that the big issue, because I've collaborated on comics before, I've written a couple, but I don't illustrate. Okay. I have an artist I work with that, and an artistic burnout is like a real risk when you approach a yes. full length work like this. And I think that whatever you can do to kind of keep it interesting for yourself as you go is really important.
Yeah. I was like knowing, I'm like, if I have to do just sketches for like a year of my life, like I'll fall apart. Like it's just like, it's not for me. So that I just kind of just trying to figure out what you're saying, like what keeps you interested. Mm-hmm. So it's like doing different chunks at a time and, you know, certainly led to me probably having to deal with more editing later on, but I was like, whatever, you know? But it's, burnout is real. I mean, I started to have hand issues too, like, cause you're just drawing that. I'm not used to drawing that much. Like I draw every day, but like, not like so much forever drawing and then moving over to coloring and like, you know, cause so I draw on paper, but then I scan everything. And then I do in Procreate, I just add like gray scales for that, you know, like with other stuff, I do inking as well. But for the book, it was gray tones in Procreate. And then there's like, you know, like the looking at the iPad and your eyes, I was getting like those blue light glasses, wondering if those will work. But it's a much more like 9-to-5 job than I've ever sort of taken drawing as seriously. Like before, it's like I used to do little spurts here and there and I run around. Maybe I draw it at nighttime, I draw over here. But this was like, oh my God, I'm really going to have to like get up and I'm drawing from 9-to-5. And then I'm putting the pen down so that I can like not have a heart attack.
Yeah, I guess routine becomes really important because.
It does. Yeah. It's, well, yeah, my friend Sophia Warren just finished her book that's coming out next year. And it was like, we all like had a party for it. So it was like the second you put the pen down that you're like, I really did it all. It's like, holy shit, feels so good. And then feels really strange because you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do tomorrow? Like I've had this like rigid thing. So I totally had a little emotional crisis when I actually finished the book. I was like, oh, what? Like,
oh, I bet. Yeah. Cause you spend all that time building a routine and then.
Yeah. Yeah. Disappears.
Exactly. Wow. So I'm really curious about, you know, and you talk about this in the book, about when your true crime obsession began. And I know you mentioned in the book that it's sort of like a family phenomenon for you. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, about how your family helped to shape this interest.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of hard. Like, I think it's like when I started to write the book, I was initially like, oh, I think it began like when I saw the Zodiac movie. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, actually, it's probably like seeds of it were much earlier in my life. The thing was like the main idea I had, I mean, I wanted to basically write a book about my mother and I was trying to figure out how to do it. Like, I was like, there's these other ways. And then true crime kind of became the way to write a book mostly about my relationship with my mother. And then I was talking to my sister. I'm like, why do you think we like true crime so much? And she's like, yeah, well, because of mom. And then I asked my mom, I'm like, well, why do you think you like it so much? And then she's like, because of my mom. And I was like, okay. Like, it's like, seemed to be this sort of like funny little passed down trait. And then even my great grandmother apparently also was like very much always like reading those, like, I mean, back then, obviously it was in different format, but reading like detective magazines and books like that. So it definitely appears to be in the genes. It's a hereditary issue.
That's so cool. And it is like a, you know, an interesting thing to bond with family over, but I also think it totally makes sense because they're like emotionally charged stories. And like, sometimes they have resolutions, but oftentimes they don't. So they can kind of like stick with you for that reason.
I think the reality is like, because a lot of people are like, how can you write something funny about murder? And I'm like, this is what everyone's doing. I mean, to me, this is every dinner table conversation I've ever had, you know? So I'm like, and I know from true crime fandom, of course, it's like, not fandom, but whatever you want to call it. But everyone's at home having the same conversation. So it's like, I just wanted to put that to paper of like, we're all like, it's not, we're not laughing at murder, but like, it's, there's just these ridiculous stories that you hear and you share with each other. And then you're like, what? Like, and there's weird excitement and scary feelings. And like, I hope that doesn't happen to me and everything. And it's just kind of like, for me and my family, it's just very much a part of our like dialect or whatever the word is. It's like, it's just a part of like how we speak to each other is like, making a joke, you know, somebody over there, and you go, well, I hope they didn't kill him, you know, like just sort of like always making jokes about murdering each other, you know.
And I think that, you know, that leads me into another question, that something that I really enjoyed about the book is the tone and this sort of like fine line that you walk, because it obviously is very humorous and you treat the topic with some levity, but you also maintain like sympathy for the victims and you treat it like seriously. And I was wondering about how you landed, you know, on the tone that you adopted for the book.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's really just how I talk is like, is the way the book's written. It's like, it's as if I've just been talking for, you know, 3 hours or something. Like it's, cause I wanted the book to feel conversational, just kind of feel like you're, you know, talking to your mom or your friend about this thing that we're all obsessed with. And so it was sort of doing the balance of like, I'm gonna tell you a dark story, but it's gonna remind me of another funny story. And then I'm gonna come back to the dark story that'll also bring up another tangent of like a joke that made me think of a different type of joke. And then I'm gonna come back to the darker thing. But then, so it's kind of like all these asides basically, and a little like a lot of like little commentary put in. And again, which is how I talk. Like someone said to me, like, this book is a tangent. And I was like, yes, that is true. Like I go off on a lot of tangents, and that's just, that's my personality, quite frankly. So, and I mean, my editor definitely would like, you know, find places where she'd be like, yeah, maybe not, like, don't do that there. Like kind of keep it more serious in this area. But I can't say I thought too much. I mean, I thought about it, obviously, but it's kind of just very natural to me to be like, oh, this is a story, and this is another story I have, and here's another story, and I don't know, they're all coming together. So it, in many ways, just kind of, you know, that's that annoying classic line that people say, they're like, it just came out of me. I'm like, it kind of did, I guess. it felt natural, basically.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, because I think it's... like enormously successful, and the way that you use like different stories as lenses into both like your family and your, you know, your personal life and all these other topics. Like it's really a very interesting book. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I tried to do so much. Like when I was like, you know, when Anders McMeel bought the book, they're like, how big is this book going to be? And I was like, 500 pages, and then I like had to come down off that. But then it was like I could have gone further, but like I was tired. But it was like there's so many things I have to say about the genre and about different crimes, and then about my, you know, and then about like women, you know. So it's like all these things that I was trying to interweave, and who knows, maybe I'll, you know, do a volume two of it or something and kind of do some more crimes and stuff, because I can like I could talk about this until the end of time, really. But I wanted it to read as like part history of true crime as a genre in general and part memoir. So it was fun to go back and forth in between the chapters. And I think that's what keeps the book interesting, is like, you're over here and you're gonna hear this different story, then you're gonna come back here, and like sort of keeps it exciting, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it lets you, I think that bouncing around is like what helps with that like tonal balance that you achieve. Sure. That you can like put one story on pause for a second and let it, yes, let it breathe, or let it simmer, and then, you know, yes, talk about something else for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I am so fascinated by your discussion of you know, women and true crime, and this sort of like phenomenon that like most true crime fans, not all, but like most, are women, and that it, you know, tends to appeal to female audiences. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, why you think the genre appeals so much to women.
I know, and that's the age-old question. I think by the end of the book, it's kind of realizing you're like, well, there's no one reason. There's this sort of like hodgepodge of reasons, and then everyone else can have their own personal like ideas about why they think they're so attracted. But well, when I was setting out in the book to like decide what things I was going to talk about, I read a lot of like psych studies, like psychological studies on like, you know, therapists and whoever saying like that their input on why true crime is so attractive to women. And it was basically broken down into just like a few like main reasons of like, A, humans, and this part isn't female, it's just like that, like you're just it's normal for the human brain to be fascinated by something awful. Like it's like watching a plane crash or anything and like being like, you can't look away from it because it's not happening to you too. So it's like, it's at a distance and you're like fascinated by whatever this thing is and you want to know more about it. Mm. And I think that like, especially with crime, you want to know like, well, how did that person end up there? Like, how did all these things come to be? And like, and so then the other part of the thing is like watching true crime is sort of learning how to keep yourself safe. It, like, you might not be consciously thinking that, but more on a more subconscious level. And because in America and most of the world, the true crime that actually gets put out, that's like in the news, that's books being, you know, books, podcasts, whatever, for the most part, up until recently, you know, is women being killed mostly by their lovers, right? Or a serial killer. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you know, with that, it's like, okay, so women are more into it, identifying more with it because they can see themselves in the victim. And so then it's like the fear of, well, that could be me. So it's like a sympathy thing, but also a fear thing. Mm. And then that could be, you know, that's like not like statistically, obviously women are actually not murdered as, you know, it's like, I think men are more murdered. What a fun sentence. Men are more murdered. They're just more murdered. And but that's not what you see on Dateline or 2020 or, you know, all of Anne Rule's books. And you know, it's like it's women, and of course it's white women too. Mm-hmm. I make a point in the book of like, I think a lot of like hack comedian joke thing is like, only white women watch true crime, and I'm like, that is for sure not true. Like, it's like, I know white women do love true crime, but so do black women and Asian women. Like, it's not, you know, just a white woman thing, but obviously in the news, it's white women who get like the press. I'm losing myself. I'm talking all over the place, but there's all these ideas. And then it's like, and then it's the vicious anxiety thing of like, well, now I'm like addicted to this thing. And then I'm actually more anxious that like something's going to happen to me, but I want to find out more. And it's like this. So it's also prone to women with anxiety disorder are also major true crime addicts.
Yeah. I think that's like why I was initially drawn to it too, because as somebody who is like a generally anxious person, mm-hmm. it's nice to watch true crime, and like horror functions this way too, but it's nice to watch something and know what you're scared of in the moment, you know?
You're like, oh, I'm afraid of this thing. But it's, you know, I read some studies talking about how like it's like experiencing being on a roller coaster, but you're not actually on it. So you yourself are safe. And you can watch and you can live through all the emotions and fears and feelings of everything that's happening, but you know you're safe the whole time. So that's part of it. And then, you know, and then this part isn't female too, but just sort of like liking to figure out a puzzle. It's like brain, you know, many people's brains just enjoy that. But at the same time, I've met many women that are like, I hate true crime. I don't know why you, I'm like, okay, see, there you go. I don't know them. Like, what makes me like it and you not? Who the hell knows? Like, that's what I was kind of coming back to. I'm like, well, that part makes me think it's like more of like your upbringing. Like, it's like, what was talked about at the dinner table and like what became interesting to you from there? Because like, it was just so much a part of my upbringing.
Absolutely. And it makes sense as, you know, dinner table conversation too, because so many of those stories like played out over time and new details arise, you know, and it keeps the conversation going.
Sure. It's just like, what'd you hear, read in the newspaper today? You know, it's like true crime is also just like the news. Like, it just is the news, you know, it's like what stuff that's happening. So like, of course, you know, like when you have like a case unfolding maybe in your town, you know, and every day something different is coming out, like that's riveting because you just want to get to the bottom of it. And Anne Rule talks about in many interviews, I wish I knew Anne Rule, but of course she's passed. But I read a lot of their interviews and listened to them about how she, as a little kid, became very like interested and fascinated by like what makes someone become a criminal, like why they're born here, they're just a baby, and what happens like in their life, and sort of like trailing like through the, what specific things would lead them to become a murderer, basically. And that is like that is part of my interest, and also the fact that I just like biographies too, or like memoirs. Like it's like just learning about people's lives, basically, is what I also really enjoy. And true crime is that in many ways. It's learning lives lost, you know, like it's just sort of chronicling people's whole existence and what made them who they were.
That's a really interesting point, I think, too, that like in a way, you know, even though oftentimes the focus is the murder and the end of the life, like it's also about the life that the person lived, you know, and sure. And that is very.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's some authors that are way better at talking about the victims than rather than the killer, you know, and I tend to like that stuff more. I think that was like, there's those all these different Ted Bundy documentaries came out in the past few years. And for me, I just hated the one on Netflix so much. I just thought it was way too much about Ted and kept being like, oh, and he was attractive. And we're like, why is this still being said? Like, why are we still? But then at the same time, these women on Amazon or Amazon Prime released another documentary series on Ted Bundy that was made by women, and it was much more focused on the victims, and it was a way better documentary series. And of course I can't remember the name of it right now, but I highly recommend it. But it's because there's two ways to go about, you know, it's like you can either focus heavily on the killer, which is stupid, like, you know, it's not what should be remembered. It's, you want to remember the people who lost their lives.
Yeah, I'm wondering a little bit about like what your writing process was like, especially with regards to research, because it reads as a very well-researched book. And I was curious about whether this was all just information that was already living in your head, or if there was additional research that you did over the course of writing the book.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is both. Like there's a lot that was in my head, like, you know, I mean, a lot of just personal stories and things, and all the Law and Order I watch, and just sort of like everything that I watch and read. But I absolutely did a shit ton of research. I mean, like through all the cases that I wanted to talk about, I, you know, did a bunch of research on that. I did research on what was early true crime, and then what were the big, you know, like the shift of like being just maybe in the papers to becoming like the birth of like 24-hour news, and then that giving way to like the idea of the docuseries many years later. And so I did a lot of breaking down of like what was the real first true crime movie, and like going through so much. So I watched so many documentaries that I'd never seen before, and so that was part was really fun. And watching, like, I watch a lot of early Dateline and, like, trying to see how, you know, how much it's changed. And unfortunately, I had to keep it within the United States, because once you go outside of that, it's like, okay, there's so many things, obviously, like, I could just go until the end of time, because they all have their own histories. But it was a lot of research, a lot of note-taking, you know, and that was fun though. I had a good time. Like this was a very fun book for me. I'm watching Law and Order as research. I'm like, interesting. Like you write off everything I like purchased on Amazon. Like yet another great Law and Order DVD, you know. But yeah, so it was a lot of research.
It's awesome. And it really comes through. Like they're very well told stories, and like very comprehensively, you know, of course, like in the cases where we know the whole story and how things turn out. And yeah. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. I'd like to thank you for discussing your book with me and our listeners. This has been Jen with Turn the Page Podcast in discussion with Hillary Fitzgerald Campbell, author of Murder Book, which you should definitely check out. Thank you so much for listening. And for now, we are going to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.